Welcome to the Orange County Workforce Development Board's One-Stop Oversight Committee meeting. My name is Barbara Mason. I work for the company and I chair this committee. We're going to begin the meeting now. Okay, would anyone like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Okay, if not, I will. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Okay, board member roll call.
Rob Claudio. Steve Curiel. Mike Daniel.
Here.
Chris Horton.
Present.
Barbara Mason.
Present.
Gary Mackin. Carlos Aragon.
Present.
And Mike Ruin. I see Steve signed on, so I got just. We do have quorum now.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. So first we'll go to public comment. So do we have anyone from the public? Can you see?
We did not receive any requests to speak in advance. If there are members of the public that would like to address the committee, please use the hand raise icon or press star 9 and I will unmute you. Seeing no hands, Chair.
Okay. We will proceed then to our action item, supportive services policy.
So previously the board met and discussed a supportive service policy in which we agreed to increase the dollar amount available to individuals that required supportive service. In that policy, there was a couple of errors, meaning that there was added language that required income level verification for the additional supportive service, and that does not comply with the law, so we had to take that out. So essentially, this is the same policy we read before, minus some language that should not have been added to that policy in regards to income level review. If you scroll down, I think that there's a red line to kind of show you where the changes were made. I think it's the whole next one. There we go. So there are changes made. So there's one change right here is where they removed an excerpt from the law. So we want to make sure that we quote where in the law it's found. So that red right there is added back to the policy where it was removed previously. Scroll down a little bit more, please. A little bit more. Right here is language that was removed that needed to be added back. We are supposed to disclose what WIOA funds are and that it's not an entitlement program, how it actually works and how people have access to it. So I asked staff to add that language back to the policy. Can we scroll down a little bit more? This section right here also, there were, like I said, added language and the removal of language that should have been in this policy and that was originally in this policy that staff removed inadvertently. And so I asked staff to put the language back in the policy that should be there and remove the additional requirements that should not, because it basically contradicts what the law says. There is no income verification for supportive services. Once you're enrolled in WIOA, if you are eligible for supportive service, it's available to you. You don't have to meet income guidelines just to request supportive services. So we corrected that language, and essentially what we're asking this committee to do at this time is to approve the changes or the revision that staff made to put back the necessary language, but then to remove the language that contradicts what the law says. I want to remind you, last quarter we met, you approved this policy. I didn't notice the additional language and the removal of key facts.
Wait, do you need a motion, Parma?
I do. I do need a motion.
I motion for the removal of the language that you just pointed to and the addition of the new language, or I guess bringing back the old language that's now the language.
Carlos seconds.
All
Okay, I'll proceed with the roll call vote. Rob Claudio. Steve Curiel.
Aye.
Mike Daniel.
Approve.
Chris Horton.
Approve.
Barbara Mason.
Approve.
Gary Mackin. Carlos Oregon.
Approve.
And Mike Ruin. I thought I saw Mike join.
I thought I did too.
Mike, can you hear us? I see him.
Yeah, I do see him.
That is still majority chair.
Okay. But Mike, be aware we're not hearing you if you're speaking. Okay, with that, we are done with the one action item. So now we can move on to information items. Program performance.
Before we turn this over to Rick to go over the program performance from America Works, I want to highlight that there are invoices missing from this. So in the past, we've talked about how difficult it is for us to make financial decisions if service providers are not submitting their invoices in a timely manner. And so I want to highlight I believe it's an invoice missing, and I'll let Rick talk about that in further detail about how many invoices are missing in this performance review.
So it sounds like we're not making progress on getting them to improve their timeliness with the invoice.
I don't think that America Works had necessarily had a problem in the past. I think that it was some of our other service providers. I don't think that this is common for America Works. I'm not really sure what happened as to cause a delay. But I recently had a conversation with staff, and they shared with me that they were behind on it. I believe it was November and December. And Rick, you're more than welcome to speak up. And Desiree, can we get to slide 18? There we go. Rick, you're on mute.
Yeah. Oh, just waiting. Thanks, Karma. So yes, the invoices pending are for November, December, for the amount of $225,515.60, which would put us at a relatively normal expenditure rate. I would just add, I think Karma covered it as far as identifying the operator as not having as many issues, but I will say that because of the pending move to the new locations of Brea and Laguna, namely Laguna, the first one, we were anticipating trying to move as early as December at one point, and then it did get pushed back to January. And so then there was a much more expedited prioritization of all the procurements that needed to go and the inventory, which we did, those moved along well. So that might have been contributing to some degree to the delayed expenses. But as far as the expenditures, the America Works is on track, and they have been, been able to communicate if it's not, being timely and been better on track with those. So I don't know if there's any further questions on the budget as is and the pending expenditures for November, December, but if not, then go to the performance category section. Oh, I'm sorry. Still within it though. Were you there? Yeah. I have it on my end. So just to review, from the first time visitors, virtual trainings, on-site trainings, ACT work keys, they're all on par. There was a slight dip in the first time visitors in the December month, which is to be expected given the holiday month, but all of the numbers are comparable to the normal rates, normal traffic flow within the center. The ACT work keys clearly still a struggle. That is something that we are working on. One of the new programs we have is the Grow with Google program, which the operator is implementing now. And that's an opportunity we've discussed to incorporate ACT work keys and provide that, work readiness service to folks on a certificated job track with the Grow with Google certificates and the program, as well as our existing WIOA clients. So, they have been informed. I think one of the challenges for them is just given the pending move, which is, a lot of details that they're prioritizing as needed, but the performance category numbers are on point, relative to the normal traffic flow in the previous quarter. Any questions on those numbers to date or expenditures?
Desiree, is there any way to zoom in a little bit so they're a little more legible? There.
Oh, thank you.
Are there any questions? Because I think I think if we're looking at the first time visitors and the training numbers, I think that as a workforce system, we expected the numbers to increase. We wanted more visits to the center, but it looks like the people are not visiting the center as much as we thought. And people are not using face-to-face training as much as we thought. As you can see, there's far more virtual training sessions being held and people attending than there is actual face-to-face or on-site training, which goes back to something that this board has mentioned
per
occasion about virtual and maybe stepping back from on-site activities.
It definitely amplifies what we've talked about quite a bit.
Yeah.
Which one-stops does this represent?
This represents the Garden Grove One-Stop Center. Although the one-stop operator provides support to the other facilities, such as the Manchester office building facility and the Theo Lacy Jail, the majority of this information is tied to what's happening in the Garden Grove facility. So I think that as we look at expanding centers, so we're scheduled to open up Laguna, La Brea. I think we may have some challenges with on-site visits. I think we talked about in the past that virtual one-stop. I still think that it made sense for what we're seeing in terms of program service delivery, that people are not taking advantage of on-site visits or activities like they did before the pandemic. We're a year or so out, and we still don't have the flow of traffic that we thought we would.
Yeah. Well, I think it makes us really wonder, should we be really building more brick and mortar ones?
Yeah. So I'm looking at the data, and this is just this year or July 1, right, for year to date, July 1 through December 22. When you look at year to date totals, the online, on-site and virtual kind of almost even out. So it's really a dramatic drop this last quarter. And it goes back, I think, does it have to do with is Garden Grove saying, okay, we're closing down, moved virtual, we're going to be moving, and that just sending a message out that people don't want to come in?
I don't think it's necessarily that. I do think that the holiday played a role, right? So you've got, we're talking October through December, so you've got the holiday season in there, right? But if you look overall at just kind of what we did a year ago, 2-3 years ago in terms of service delivery, we're still not at the numbers where 10,000 people are coming into the facility in a month, right? So that's what it used to be reported was an average of 10,000 a month, and we're not seeing that.
Yeah, that's dramatic.
There was actually, from the quarter one till now, there was actually a slight increase in both the virtual and on-site training. So on-site training has been 92 participants. You're right. Yeah, there was a drop. Yeah, my apologies.
Yeah, so the other thing I want to highlight is the Grow with Google. Francis made a good point that EDD isn't providing services full-time like they did in the past. So remember, part of our performance was that UI claimants would come into the One-Stop Center to receive services, right, through EDD. And so since EDD is half staff, that means that we're not getting as many UI claimants coming into the center that would have access to our services. The other thing is we are trying to implement services that we believe the community would need, like the ACT work keys. Prior to the pandemic, I was working on a partnership with Kaiser so that nurses who needed to have the ACT work key certification or training could come into the One-Stop Center, get that, and then go over to Kaiser, right, to get for their job placement. We were working on partnerships like that. The Grow with Google is yet another partnership that we are trying to work on to bring people to the center so they can see the services and utilize them. Interesting that we've introduced the Grow with Google certificates at no cost to the community. And when I say the community, I mean, we opened it up to 300 people. That 300 people, you don't have to pay for a Google certificate, which would normally cost about $500 or $600. You can actually come over to the One Stop and get it for free. I believe that we have no individuals enrolled in it, and maybe a couple of people who have indicated that they're interested, which is very interesting, given that we're offering something for free, right? So all we're asking you to do is come utilize our facility to take advantage of this free service. I think what we'll do as a system is continue to look for ways to bring people or attract people to our centers. But I do think that there's something to be said about the new normal.
Yeah, people are comfortable
more of this.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
I think that this is not an anomaly. I think we're going to see more of this.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, people are just comfortable working and doing everything at home now.
Or if the public library is closer to their home, they can like log in from there and do these things and not have to maybe take a bus and find parking and all that.
Yeah. Francis brought up an interesting point that on average, it was about 2,500 people coming into the center a month with EDD being in the facility, with them not there. Like that puts a stunt.
Oh, that's big.
Yeah, right. So
that's big.
Yeah, that's a big drop in visitors. So I think that there's something to be said to that. But I also agree with you, Barbara, that everyone's going virtual. So even EDD is not returning back to normal. They've already decided that their staff will work part-time out of the one-stop centers across California. And that services will still be delivered virtually, whether it be by telephone or online. So I think there's something to be said that the brick and mortar, I keep preaching it, it's on its way out. I know that it's in the law to exist, but it appears to be kind of on its way out.
So should we be looking at maybe at some point getting out of some of these leases or subleasing?
Well, so by the law right now says that we have to have at least one, right? So we have... We have to have one. And right now the Garden Grove lease, I think I've shared this. I've been very transparent about it. The lease is currently in a service provider's name and it shouldn't be. It should be in the Workforce Development Board's name or the county's. And so we were resolving that issue by opening up Brea and Laguna so that those leases are held in the county's name or the Workforce Development Board's name. But you're right. I think that, you know, as you guys, this is a partnership between the Workforce Development Board and the Board of Supervisors. It may be something where you two get together and decide for this workforce system, maybe these brick and mortars don't need to open up and that maybe we should focus on just the one big comprehensive and figuring out how to deliver services virtually or using opportunities like the library or the mobile.
Yeah.
Use
the county libraries.
Yeah.
And the mobile unit. I love the mobile unit.
Is there, I mean, I'm coming into this kind of new, so forgive me if I'm going over something you guys already talked about, but another thing that could be driving this is just, there's just not people requesting services at all, whether they're online or brick and mortar. Is there any way to tell if that's the case? Are we, I know, because in schools, in education, our school, the colleges, they're seeing a huge drop. They're not, students haven't returned. Is that also part, because that's a significant drop. From what was it, 2,500 a month to less than 1,000?
I do think EDD having that kind of traffic right there is a big factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we are assuming that EDD's got the traffic, but we don't know for sure.
No. To be honest, they did. So
they did. They saw the EDD.
That was the majority of the people that was the first time visitors or visiting the One Stop Center. They were visiting because they had to in order for them to apply for UI. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that having that element removed makes the center, it's less likely somebody just stumbled into the center, right? Most people only hear about us by word of mouth or because they were required to go. We haven't done a lot of outreach, which I think you guys have seen the progression of our outreach that we started to create a brand so that people understand who we are. We started hiring a third party to help us with our social media. I do think that we are still one of those things that people don't know that we exist or how to use the system. I think that if I had to choose between an employment placement agency who took money out of my paycheck versus coming to the one stop, I would go to the one stop if I knew that it existed. But most people know about the temp agencies, but don't know about the one stop centers.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the just to add just the recruitment factor and the outreach based on terminology is important. I know that's something that's been on the radar, especially with the Hallmark being presented and worked on, obviously, to the first quarter's board meeting presentation. And just to kind of confirm that in supporting a RFP process with a Vegas system and the Workforce Connections, they echoed a similar sentiment as far as wanting to kind of see a little bit more of the kind of traditional grassroots type of outreach rather than, you know, because the traffic wasn't the same, you know, given post-pandemic and the digital age, we're just, you know, getting thrust even more into kind of just gives rise to the need of you know, diversifying some of the recruitment strategy, or at least taking another look. And so it's not particular just to our one stop, and it's, you know, it's been voiced in another state, another area as well.
I think we should also be starting and looking in the future at the kind of providers. I'm sensing it might be different providers if you did more virtual than brick and mortar types. It's a little bit different service than in-person handholding versus virtual engagements. And maybe that's something to start looking at.
I think it's a good idea. I think when we look at the future of education, education is looking at how do you deliver education services on a virtual platform.
Yeah, it may be different providers than we've used.
Yeah, that's a good idea. We can certainly explore that. I want to make sure that I'm making the best use of all of our time. We still have some more performance reports to review.
Yes.
Are there any other questions or concerns about this AmericaWorks performance for this quarter?
I just wanted to add in, what about like a social media platform? I know we have something now, but, you know, bolstering that.
We're working on that. So we've hired a third party company to help us with that, to develop content and to find us people to like us and follow us. So it's only as good as people know that we exist and are using it, right? I want to encourage all of you, if you're not following us, to take out your phone right now, to like us, to subscribe, to follow us, because the more of you that support us, the more people that know you will support us. But yeah, we are definitely working on extending our social media presence and really trying to connect with people on that those platforms more intentionally than we have in the past. But I'm going to tell you guys, board members, if I go out there and I don't see that you guys are friends, I'm going to question you guys.
Okay, so I hear what you're saying on the timing. We're a quarter of the way through and we got more to go. So maybe we should move on. But I think this first one really amplifies a trend and a real uptick in that trend that I don't think is going to change.
Yeah. And Karma, just to make sure, if I was hearing you right, do you have a concern with this invoicing issue?
Yes. So what's going to happen is I'm going to ask staff to write a corrective action letter to AmericaWorks, because we do have it in their contract that they're supposed to submit invoices in a timely manner. When they don't follow the contract terms and conditions, we need to call that out. So we will be writing them a corrective action letter. The other issue with this is that it's hard for us to figure out how much money is going to come back if you're not sending us the invoice, right? Mm-hmm. And right now we need to be planning for next year's contract. And if I had to guess, I'd see you giving me back probably $1 million based off the fact that you haven't even, you get what I'm saying?
Whoa, that's substantial.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's not that, but based off of what I see right now, that's what I would assume given the fact that you've not turned in your invoices, right? So it's important that service providers turn their invoices in on a timely manner so that we can do a better job of reallocating our dollars. Because remember, we've contracted with this service provider and held up $2 million of our adult dislocated worker funding for them. And if they're not able to spend it, we'd like to reclassify or reuse it with another program if we can, so that we don't have to give it back to the state, because anything that we don't use, we have to give return.
Right. Very good.
We're gonna get less next year.
Mm-hmm. I didn't hear that comment. I think I heard something
about. Oh, I said, and then we get less next year.
That's exactly right. So when they start thinking about formula funds and they see a pattern with Orange County giving money back, they start reducing how much comes to us as the workforce system.
Yeah.
Are we okay to proceed?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm good.
Okay, so the next performance report we're going to review is the career teams. If we can go to page 19. And I believe Maggie's going to give a report out on this one.
Yes, good afternoon. So this is the performance report for quarter two for Adult North. And for the quarter, they had $54,566.44 in expenditures. This only reflects a few of the invoices. They did start off to submit late invoices and then invoices that were not in good standing, meaning that proper backup documentation was not submitted. So they were rejected. So this only reflects a few of the invoices on there. As for the performance categories, they had 89 new enrollments, putting them at a year-to-date of 144, 36%. For target population, they had 100 individuals in target population, putting them at 151 year-to-date, and so 42%. Employment placements, they only had two for the quarter, putting them at 54 for 19%. Medium earnings was 9,800, and so putting them at 113%. Attainment of a degree and certificate, there were 11 individuals that obtained it during the quarter, putting them at 18 for 7%. Literacy numeracy gain, only two participants, putting them at a year-to-date of 4. For 1%. And then for co-enrollments into WIOA services, there were 14 of them, putting them at 18. Program exits for the quarter were 20, putting them at 55 at 16% of their target goal. Out of the 56 participants that were provided services within one week of program enrollment, and those numbers are off. I apologize. Yes. So those numbers should have reflected the 89. For ITAs, they had 47 placements during quarter two, putting them at 53 year to date, and one WACS or transitional job placement for the quarter. If we can move to the next report.
Can I ask a question?
Yes. Maybe
it's minor, but why the contracted, if you can go back up a little.
Uh-huh.
The, what was it? Literacy. The contracted goal is 320, and we've done, if I'm reading this right, we've done six. Is that right? But am I understanding that correctly? Literacy, numeracy gain in program skills. Is that meaning we were expecting 320 people to complete that training? And we've
for
only,
the year. Correct.
For the year.
So for the year, they need to meet 320, and year to date number is 4.
That's way off. How do we come up with, I'm trying to understand, is 320 a realistic number?
It is.
Or were we way out there?
No.
Just really underperforming? I mean, that seems way off.
Let me explain to you how I do it. So every year I'm required to negotiate our performance, right? So every year as a workforce system, I'm responsible to say, okay, EDD, here's what I think we can do as a workforce system. If I'm being honest, it's not very much of a negotiation. They kind of tell me, like, Carmen, you need to get these numbers, right? But based on the people that we enroll, I kind of inflate our numbers a little bit so that we make performance, right? So for example, I might've negotiated, 30%, but I'm going to turn it around and make it 50% for the service providers. What I decided to do when we contract with our service providers is to turn it into numbers. So that way it's not the percentages, it's actual number of people. So of the 495 people that you enroll, I negotiated with the state that no less than 320 of them receive a literacy numeracy gain, because you shouldn't be enrolling anybody in our program that you don't expect to learn anything, right?
Right.
Or have a gain in their literacy information. That ACT work keys is part of how you could get that literacy numeracy gain, but nobody is enrolled in it, right? Overall, I wanted to highlight that this performance is dismal, if I'm being honest with you, because this is all the way through December. So that's two quarters in. It should be at least 50% across the board. What I plan to do is hire a third party to come out and do training. Normally, I would not do that because when people go after our procurements, they say, hey, Karma, Orange County Workforce Development Board, I have the knowledge and the skills to successfully perform what you asked me to do in this RFP. I will train my staff to deliver that product or service in accordance with what you asked for, right? And so normally I would say no to that, but given the performance that we've seen and some of the things that have happened recently, I think it's important for me to at least try to see if I can get a turnaround with the service provider and their staff. I'm really not sure why the performance is the way it looks, because if I'm being honest, you'll learn later on that Anthony's core program and the BEEP program have high performing numbers and very little staff. Like there's two and three staff members on those teams, but yet their performance numbers are greater than this, where these service providers have at least 20 plus people on their staff. So I cannot logically tell you why these numbers look like that, other than maybe a training gap. And so what I'm going to try to do as the last ditch effort is to try to provide training to the service providers on how this really works and how to really engage with participants in a meaningful way so that you get program performance. I think one of the other things that might happen is that when participants are enrolling in these programs, they're sold on the supportive services. And that's the last thing that we do. Like supportive services isn't a guarantee. It's not entitlement. It's there for you if you need it, but we shouldn't be opening up and encouraging people to enroll in our program based on the idea that they'll get supportive service or we'll automatically send them to training. Because if we haven't worked out your immediate needs, no amount of supportive service or training is going to help me with those numbers in regards to performance.
Got it. Thank you.
I have a question also. I'm noticing on the next four pages for career team, it seems there are no numbers when it comes to like costs for quarter one. Did they start in quarter two, or did they just not send any invoices in for quarter one?
So Maggie, I need you to be more specific about what invoices did we get, because it looks to me that we only got maybe one or two invoices. That means that we didn't get anything, maybe not have gotten anything. We should have six invoices. I don't know if we have more than two. It looks like to me maybe one or two. But Maggie, can you please?
Yeah, so for quarter one, we did not have any invoices paid. I think they had recently received them and they were not in good order, so they were kicked back. For quarter two here, the expenditures reflect invoices July and August being paid so far.
What does that mean, the invoices weren't in good order? Incomplete?
Yeah, incomplete.
The numbers didn't add up. What does that mean?
It might mean the numbers didn't add up. It might mean you didn't bring the supporting documentation that's required. It might mean that you might have charged for things that are not allowable. It's a variety of different reasons why we might kick it back, but we are very clear with our service providers that in order for us to process and pay your invoice, it must be received in good order. And we do require backup documentation to support costs because these are cost reimbursement contracts.
Got it.
So then if they were July, August, then quarter two should be zeros.
Well, no. So here's what likely happened, like Maggie said. So maybe you didn't send me anything July, August, or September, but then you sent me November and December. I'm going to process and pay November and December because it was in good order, but you still don't have July, August, and September pay because it's not right yet.
Oh, I thought she had said the invoices were for July and August. I must have missed her.
Oh, she might have, no, she probably did say that. I was just trying to highlight that it doesn't necessarily mean that they're in that order. Sometimes service providers don't send them in orderly to be paid.
Got it. Okay.
So Chris, no, just to clarify, invoices for July and August were paid during the second quarter. That's why they're reflected there.
So we just got them. So we don't have, so let me make sure I'm clear, Maggie. Out of the six we should have, we only received two.
In good order that were paid, yes.
Okay.
And even though they were from a prior quarter, they were paid in the current quarter, which is why they show up in the current quarter.
Correct.
Got it. So will they be receiving one of the corrective action letters as well?
Did they already receive one, Maggie? I thought they might have already.
No, not for invoices, but we'll be working on one for invoices as well.
And then how long do they have to get things in order? How long does this go on?
We usually ask for a 30-day corrective action. So we usually ask you to correct it within 30 days and give us a plan within 30 days. Now, it depends on this board. So let's hypothetically say that next board I come back to you and it still isn't corrected. It is on this board to decide like how we move forward. So if a service provider can't seem to correct challenges, then this board has the right to decide that, hey, Karma, we need to start putting out an RFP for a new provider. We don't want to move forward. This board is a, it's an active board, meaning that you have the right to tell us that you do not want to continue with the service contracted service provider. The only issue is that if you don't continue with the contracted service provider, you got to find somebody in their place, right? And procurement take a while for the county. So the county is your fiscal agent. And they do your procurement. And so you're at their mercy to get your procurement done.
And I think when we meet
disruptive and the cost, there's this adds to overhead cost of the county and the staff having to, you know, ding that they didn't do it and then reprocess it. So there is an impact on many levels.
That's correct.
And it feels like they should be held account. I mean, I can see the first time a new provider, maybe not clear.
Exactly.
But once they've been instructed and educated and a repeat of this is unacceptable.
And I think the next time we meet, when we look at Q3, it's going to be very telling whether they got things in order or if we're still fighting this battle.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm good.
I think you're going to see for the next three slides similar information. So I don't know how in depth you guys want to go on that.
Well, we still have to get through two more. This always happens. You know that every time we get into this section of performance, we always get bogged down in the details. Mm-hmm.
I know.
And then we have to zip through the rest of the agenda. So we have the veterans and the Department of Labor. Do you think we can get through the agenda 7 through 13 in an hour?
I will speed through it.
Okay. So then we could try to go on to do C and D because it's we've got 20 minutes till 2, and then we could try and get through the rest.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, we really need to look at these if we know they're already underperforming.
Yeah, if it's a similar pattern and trend.
Right.
I agree.
Okay, so what I heard you say is we're going to move on to item C, which is the veteran program, which is managed by Eric Inslee. So we're going to, Eric, if you don't mind. You're on mute. While Eric is working that out, I just want to remind you that this is an in-house program. So Eric is a staff of 2. They have done tremendous work in a short amount of time. Eric, is your mic working yet? They're primarily based out of the Los Alamitos Joint Air Force Training Base. I'm trying to stall while Eric works it out. Okay. Is it working out, Eric? All right, I'll keep stalling. So he's working out of the base and out of the Garden Grove Center, but they've done a tremendous amount of work in a short period of time. I'm really proud of their performance. We're almost at the close of his contract for the VEEP services, and they have done a really good job of getting to performance the performance goals that were required. And they've been, like I said, short-staffed the entire time and got a late start to the program. Eric, is it working now?
Yeah, I had to take my headset off. It just wasn't working.
All right.
There he is.
All right. Let me cancel this out. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Good afternoon, and thank you for providing this opportunity once again to present the VEEP participant report before this body. It's hard to believe we're nearing the end of this grant period. And during this report period, the VEEP project is poised to meet our enrollment numbers. For the period from October to December, we've enrolled 25 new participants, please next page, and screened 34 individuals for eligibility. Our enrollment numbers look great. However, many of our performance activities, such as participants entering soft skills training and readiness, occupational skills training, work-based learning, certificates attained continue to remain challenging areas, as you've heard on the previous presentation. This is to ascertain project growth performance. This challenge, I think, is indicative of what we are already currently seeing. Our soft skills numbers, we're at 18% of our projected goals. We enrolled two new or had two new people enter into soft skills training. We had six that entered into occupational skills training, bringing us to 10% of our projected goal. Work-based learning is continuing. Our OJT is trying to get our participants to engage in some form of a work-based learning project. Has been really tough to get buy-in for that. As far as attained a certificate program, because many of our participants are entering into longer periods, I think that's a reflection of why we're seeing shorter responses on getting those certificates during any one of our quarters that we present, but we still are at 7%. Unsubsidized employment, those numbers are still going up. We have participants that are getting jobs, who are getting well-paying jobs, actually above self-sufficiency. We had 10 this last quarter, bring our total percentage to 39% of our total enrollments. The VEEP staff continues to assess participants for identifiable skills gaps, as well as significant barriers to sustain long-term employment placements. We continue to provide diverse linkages to internal and external partners to assist with their engagement with removing substantial barriers. Behavioral health challenges and economic stressors appear to be the single most significant barriers to immediate progress. The other identifiable issues that we've seen is decreased self-motivation and self-management skills that cause delays, prompting staff to redirect and engage, the engagement of the participant. Next page, please. Excuse me. Participant outreach. Again, VEEP staff continues to engage with our capacity to remain mobile to meet veterans and military where they are. We attended outreach events such as the North County Career Fair, the CalVet, CSU Fullerton, CalTAP Veterans Employment Expo, and of course, our Orange County Veterans and Military Family Collaborative engages with the subcommittee, the Employment and Entrepreneur Subcommittee, to expand our presence as well as reach out to external partnerships serving this demographic. We meet monthly with the CalVet CDVA Local Interagency Network Coordinator, which is really great for us because they get a chance to spread the work that we do and enhance awareness of our Veterans Employment Program, as well as our Workforce and Economic Development Division and the work that we do here, including our workforce family. Project partnerships. Again, we remain consistently engaged with our Orange County Business Solutions team, our Jobs for Veterans State Grant, DVOPS, and our Disabled Veterans Outreach Program Coordinators and local veterans employment reps, and our WEO provider to provide regularly scheduled monthly meetings that allow us to leverage access for our participants to maintain or obtain support with their career objectives. To date, VEEP staff has facilitated 33 participant direct referrals to the JVSG team at the One Stop, 3 Department of Rehabilitation referrals, and 30 referrals to one of our community partners that does a peer-to-peer resume writing guidance, as well as mock interview enhancement for our participants that were referred. New developments this cycle has been with a faith-based organization such as St. Vincent de Paul, who met with me several months ago to really talk about how they can engage and provide some resources, community resources, to indigent veterans and military members seeking supports. Mm-hmm. I think that's enhanced a lot of our leverage to refer them over to obtain non-allowable expenses from another party that we can't pay for. Enrollments and intake assessment. As previously mentioned, VEEP has the flexibility and mobility of staff to meet veterans and military where they are. which has been one of the signature service delivery methods that allow us to opportunities to support increased barriers many participants experience. When it comes to co-enrollments, we're experiencing a little bit of the delays in co-enrollments as our new WIOA service provider gets ramped up at our one-stop location. So a lot of our participants who are wanting to enter training are coming in wanting specific types of training and looking at iTrains to find those training providers. And I think some of that co-enrollment activity has had a bit of a slow. Program services, again, intensive case management and supportive service delivery methodology appears to be helpful, but not sustainable for our current project in its current form. I think because so many of our veterans and participants have those significant barriers in areas of behavioral health as well as housing stability, we're spending a lot more time trying to help them understand, one, our service delivery system as a whole countywide, but also how to navigate those systems to get what they need so they can have full-on focus on getting into training or getting a sustainable job. Referrals to outside agencies are necessary, but are a long process. Next page, please.
Eric, going back to our discussion earlier about the training, is most of this done in person or is a lot of it virtual? When you talk about training for the veterans, how's that happening?
It's a bit of a hybrid. So we do have some that are going in person at some of these training providers. And one of the things that it didn't mention earlier, a lot of our veterans are going through the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to access those entitlements to education and training benefits that they've already earned. For those who are not eligible under that education program, they're getting training at some of our local universities and colleges to also get either degree or other types of certificate programs through either the Veterans Rapid Retraining Assistance Program type, which pays significantly just as much as full-on degrees.
Thank you.
You're welcome. System change. We have an ongoing challenge of guiding participants to address their barriers. So, you know, coupled with trying to get to training and many of our team discussions, I often refer to this as that pre-contemplation phase for the veterans. Much like at any point of change, many are aware that they need to do something different to change, but appear to be a little more reluctant or slower to engage with it, taking their time to gain access to certain types of services, including housing, believe it or not. I think we've had several that need housing resources, but are not moving as quickly as the system may allow or have expectations that things like HUD-VASH are immediate fixes, and they really are not. So we continue to address those issues with many of our coordinated entry staff with the county, as well as with the VA on properly try and get individuals in need of housing or housing assistance, appropriate access. As far as the staff project team and stakeholder training, I think we're moving towards a new iteration of this veterans employment project. So we continue to engage stakeholders' understanding of this population, including enhancing connectivities to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs healthcare service system. So most people aren't aware that the VA healthcare system is where a lot of things happen as far as getting access to HUD-VASH and potentially the Veterans Grant per diem program that's already in Long Beach. That affords an opportunity to things like compensated work therapy that allows a lot of our veterans who are just struggling with either justice involvement or addiction issues to be able to work and transition into a work environment with the work therapy and also be compensated for it. We're using a lot of non-traditional community services that leverage the support of VEAP currently, which performs the participants' mock interviews and potentially resume review with some of our veteran-owned business owners through the Veterans Business Network. Business solutions, again, constantly we have bi-weekly meetings as well as monthly meetings with the local veterans employment representatives at ADD to continue opportunities to support the veterans and military career pathways. Some of the other things that Wendy and I just addressed, we had a couple of meetings with UMass Global, who's offered an opportunity for us to co-locate or provide presentations at their Irvine campus Veterans Resource Center to allow us to gain access, but also facilitate veterans and military access to our workforce system that are less likely to get to some of our other locations. Next page, please. We've exhausted about 93% of our grant funds to date, mostly through staff salaries and some through some of our supportive services. I think what's not mentioned here is the supportive services that we provide has been minimal. I mean, like Carmen said, it's not the first part of what we are trying to get if we're trying to provide supportive services as the needs present itself, but it's not the first thing that we address as far as part of the program. Most opportunities we do provide is making sure that the veteran can look for other avenues and not rely on some of the allowable expenditures we could perform. Next page. This is actually one of my favorite parts to talk about is the success story for the program. And the collaboration we have with helping veterans navigate through a system. We have a veteran that we met with back at one of our job fairs last year in April, who was looking for better employment because he was traveling from Santa Ana to go to Compton to provide employment services. When I met this individual, he indicated he did not want to do workforce services anymore. But was interested in doing something else that would allow him to be closer to home. Wendy, our colleague here, talked to him quite a bit, gave him some mentoring along with some other avenues to try and help him transition to local employment. He subsequently landed a job with EDD with our Jobs for Veterans State grant team at the One Stop. And it was amazing simply because his commute time drastically creates some stressors for him and his family. And this was one that I think is a very broad success based on our collective collaboration to help this veteran. And I think that is all I have.
What's the average age of the veterans taking advantage of this?
I'm sorry?
What's the average age range of the veterans taking advantage of this?
Believe it or not, the average age range that we have, the majority is between the age of 34 and 45.
Okay. So kind of mid-career.
And where are we targeting, I guess, are they coming out of the service, right? And going directly into these types of programs, or are you guys catching them for 8-12 years after they've separated from the military?
I would say we're all over the map, to be honestly, with that board, because I'm at Camp Pendleton some days and also at Los Alamitos, but also just the capacity building surrounding our layers of infrastructure with other partners. So we get referrals from everywhere. We're getting referrals from as far south as the Naval Station in San Diego for people who are trying to relocate to the northern part of our county line to secure employment. So I really think that we have not set any true roadmap on how people get access to us. We're seeing folks who are within 6 months of separation, but we're also seeing people who have been out of service for 10, 15 years.
And are we presenting, or are we participating in the TAPS programs that the bases give in preparation for separation?
Yes. So I get to be a part of a lot of those at Camp Pendleton. But again, because we've expanded this network with Cal Vet, and CalTAP, they are getting a lot of our material to gain access to, if nothing else, to find out about our whole workforce system and how they can engage. We have some folks that are right on the cusp of Oceanside and Orange County who are Marines who are just getting information on how they can access services at our one stop. They're not going to Garden Grove for certain from that location, but by the time we get to our South County location, hooray, I think that's going to provide an opportunity for those individuals who are residing more close to San Clemente.
Awesome. The I know you said there's a number of services you guys provide in addition to the job search and job placement piece, but have we been leveraging, just about every single military member has a clearance of some kind. Have we been able to leverage that particular aspect of that of the veterans to assist in trying to get them integrated back into some type of cleared job position?
Ironically, most of the veterans who do possess a clearance are not trying to work any longer with defense contractors. I will tell you, I do have some connectivity with a lot of our defense contractors who are looking to hire veterans who already have those clearances. But most of the veterans that I've spoken with are not trying to work with the Department of Defense or under those contracts, because most of the time it requires them to, again, travel.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yep.
We have a few. I think that we have those that aren't open to it. We are obviously trying to make sure there's that connectivity to also enhance their ability to compete and earn higher wages.
Awesome. Thank you.
I just wanted to say, and it's funny because as I was reading through this, I wrote some notes, and kind of echoes what Karma was saying, is that I'm just proud of you, Eric, and the small team that you have for the results that you're getting. And you're helping our veterans hit their barriers head on and move past them so they can secure better careers for themselves and to help their families. So I'm very impressed with what you're all doing, and I'm very proud.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. We're very proud too. We're having a lovely time. But when we get those other 16 staff members to help us out, we're gonna just really be killing it.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
Well, if there aren't any more questions, I'd like to move to the next item, if that's okay with you, Barbara.
Yeah, I think we're at an hour five, so we need to keep moving.
Yeah, so I want to start off by explaining something before we get into this. So I'd like to ask if Anthony Rafi can be moved up, but I want to explain that we are giving this program back to DOL. So you may recall that we wrote a grant almost 2 years ago to DOL to respond to the community needs as a result of the pandemic. And we won a grant for $3 million. The $3 million was supposed to provide job placement opportunities for 600 dislocated workers. As you know, we've talked about this in the past, we've had a struggle with hiring. And so it took us about a year to get staff hired. Eventually we do get staff hired. We get Anthony hired to be the program manager, and he gets two other temp staff hired. And then we have another individual, Alexis, hired on. And so they get a good start off. They perform exceptionally well. But if I'm being honest, there was absolutely no way they're going to make the goals of that program in enough time. In addition to that, in that grant, we wrote for the LMS system, so the virtual one-stop system. We also wrote in there for a third party to help us with employment placement. In addition to that, we asked for another mobile unit. And given the timeline of how long it takes for procurement to get done, and then how long it took for us to get staff, and the fact that in the grant, we were supposed to have 8 staff members hired, we only had technically 2 people hired and then 2 temps. And because of law, we couldn't keep the temps longer than what we had them. I made a decision to ask Renee to give the money back to DOL. So Anthony's going to give you some really amazing performance. He and his staff have done a phenomenal job. I don't want to discredit the amount of work that they did in a short period of time, but I thought it would be unfair for us to continue on this grant, given that it ends in September. to try to, what word do I want to use? Continue on, given that they don't have the resources necessary to succeed, if that makes any sense. And so my recommendation was to give the money back. So with that said, I want Anthony to provide you with an overview of his performance, because they've done a phenomenal job. And a lot of the performance that Anthony has been able to do with his team, they've been able to co-enroll into the program with career teams. So that there is that synergy where Anthony went out and engaged with dislocated workers, provided them direct support and services, and then co-enrolled them when possible into the career teams program. So there is work that has been done. The participants that are enrolled, we do have a plan for the transition of them. And we do have the plan for the staff that worked on this project to continue the work, because we found value in the fact that they were able to engage with people in such a meaningful way to get them into enroll into the program. And we believe that with proper training and more hand-holding with career teams, it'll be a value to them for us to continue in this capacity of engaging with people and then encouraging their enrollment into WIOA. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Anthony so that he can share with you his performance.
Good afternoon, everybody. All right. Thank you, Karma, for a summary. I'll go straight into our performance numbers. Next slide for me, please. Program participation. All right. So as of December 31st, we enrolled 100 dislocated workers into our program, and our enrollment goal was 100. And as of today, February 9th, we have 122 individuals in our program. That's 20% of our goal within 4 months of operations. 105 of our program participants are co-enrolled into the WIOA Core Dislocated Worker Program, and that's an 86% co-enrollment rate. We have 478 enrollments remaining for us to achieve that goal by this September 2023. Next slide. All right, we have 9 program exits. 8 of our participants have entered into employment. The average hourly wage is $25.19. The median hourly wage is $38. We see placements in a couple of fields, but since it's just our first quarter of case management, most of our participants are still in workforce preparation activities. Next slide. All right. Just to give an overview as to who are we serving, 50% of our participants are male, 50% female. More than 65% of our participants are over the age of 45 years old. Next slide. Now, we often talk on this board that we serve a highly educated workforce, and that is very true. Almost 71% of our participants have completed 1 or more years of post-secondary education. Half of them have at least a bachelor's degree or higher. And then what is interesting here is that one of the greatest barriers we see with this workforce is a high level of basic literacy skills deficiency. We also see other barriers, which can include English language learners, persons with disabilities, and then people facing substantial cultural barriers.
Can I ask a quick question? From what I printed out, I don't have the slides you're showing.
Sorry, I should have started off. I rearranged a little bit on 2 of the slides.
Okay.
Yeah. Next slide. 40% of our participants are white, 40% are Latino, and 20% are between Asian and African Americans. That's generally representative of Orange County's ethnic composition. What we've seen is that 53% of our participants are low income. Next slide. Now, a primary focus of this grant is for us to reach disinvested communities. Now, within Orange County, there are 11 communities that have census tracts that are designated as disinvested communities. From our program, 47% of our participants are from disinvested communities. And we see a lot of participation from Garden Grove, Buena Park, Lake Forest, and Anaheim. Next slide. So where are we meeting people? We found 28% of the persons enrolled in our program came from rapid response. 72% of them came from walk-in referrals and really working with our partners. and 30% of our participants were RESEA eligible. Next slide. All right. So in the rapid, go ahead.
Sorry, the newbie here. Can you explain those terms again? The
rapid response when businesses are, sorry, is that the one?
Yeah. Yeah, that rapid, one. Yeah. I think the rapid response I get, why can I get the RESEA?
RESEA are jobs that are no longer, how do I explain? Sorry?
Available?
Yes, no longer available jobs that they've deemed that are not going to be available in the future. The EDD usually picks a number of persons and they get on that list for RESEA. Gotcha.
Like a buggy wheel repairman or something like that.
Yes.
Gotcha.
All right. So this is general information. The rapid response unit reported that we had 22 WARN notices in the last quarter. And in the last quarter, 73 workers were temporarily laid off and 815 were permanently laid off. And at least a quarter of this was from facility closures. And you're seeing a lot of layoffs from different industries, healthcare, finance, and insurance. You're seeing a lot of layoffs from the mortgage industry and manufacturing. Next slide. So our unit, we attended 6 in-person rapid response sessions and 2 virtual sessions. We engaged with 206 individuals or dislocated workers, I should say. We received 76 applications and were able to convert 37% of those into enrollments into our program. Next slide. For us to achieve our targets, one of the things is really working with our partners. It really takes a community to do this job, and I should say all the partners within the One Stop Center and our local workforce, where we've been collaborating to get partners into to get participants into our program. So I share credit to everyone for the successes that we share so far with getting participants into our program. We have 86% of our participants with the WIO Core program. We've been getting referrals from EDD when people are applying for UI benefits. We've been working with our front desk staff. We'll be referring everyone who talks. We talked about how to identify partners. So sorry, but that's a list of partners that we've been working with over the last quarter to reach our participants. Next slide. All right. So with all of the information that we've talked about so far, I wanted to describe what is an average participant who's coming through our program. The average participant is male or female, white or Latino, who is 48 years of age and has a family. The individual has about 1 or 2 years post-secondary education or even a bachelor's degree or higher. The individual probably is basic skills deficient, an EL, an English language learner, or has a cultural barrier. The person is probably laid off from manufacturing, healthcare, insurance industry, and probably lives in one of Orange County's disinvested communities. And before joining that program, there's a possibility that the person was earning below the livable wage in Orange County. This information is important because it really talks about how we provide case management services. Next slide, please. So in terms of case management services, based on the client profile, we spent a lot of time getting people into our program and really completing those objective assessments and IEPs. What we found with this population is that people are pivoting their careers from one of those industries, and we'll talk about where they're going, but that's where we've spent most of our time. And it really is one of the key components in serving our participants. Next slide. All right. So currently we have 11 active ITAs and we have another 30 ITAs which are approved, and it's budgeted about 214,000. We are seeing people pivot their careers to more pandemic-proof jobs in our growth sectors. And example, in healthcare, there's a focus on medical billing and coding. In IT, we're seeing interest in cybersecurity, project management, programming, data science. In trucking, most individuals are interested in short haul, because they really want to stay closer to home. And then in tourism and hospitality, we see people interested in interior design and somewhat aesthetician. Sorry. Many individuals are looking for remote work. Huh? All right, next slide. 5 of our participants use supportive services, and rent is very expensive in Orange County, but that's where most of our supportive services money went to. Next slide. All right, Karma summarized what are some of the challenges, but I really wanna highlight over the last couple of months, we've really been able to ramp up our enrollments in a short period of time, co-enrolling our participants, really connecting with our network of partners in the one-stop centers, and then partnering with Rapid Response and getting the messaging out there. It is one of the things, opportunities we've recognized is really to educate our workforce about our one-stop center services. And me being present there, talking about it, really educating them, it allowed us to bring people into our one-stop system. So some of the major program risks Karma identified, we don't have the staffing. We have a really short 7 months remaining to accomplish 3 big tasks. Enrolling 600 people, getting a mobile unit, getting placement agencies, it's a lot. And then, so those were some of the key challenges. And go all the way, next 2 slides for me, please. So next slide. So what's happening next? We're closing off our program. We're spending the next month or 2 transitioning our program to the WODW core program, looking at our LMS system and opportunities for LMS system, and then reworking our outreach activities. So thank you. That's a summary of our career grant. It's been an interesting run on this one. Thank you. Any questions? I open the floor for questions.
That was a lot of
there was a lot of information. And I did hear, going back to our earlier comment about not enough people enrolling in the lingual, learning English, there was a connection there. So these disconnects seem to perpetuate.
Yeah. I think one of the things that we were trying to work with Steve was helping us with ESL classes. And we will still continue that work because we find value in that. A lot of the people that we found that were dislocated in interested in the core program were individuals who've had jobs for 10, 20, 30 years, but only spoke a certain language. So that employer allowed you to work for them, but maybe you didn't even speak English, right? Mm-hmm. So now you're trying to get back into the job market, but you don't have the ability to really be competitive because you don't know the English language. So there are challenges like that that exist throughout this county. I think that you can see in his number of the WARN notices that we receive about 815. And then if you look at the unemployment number, I think the number was like 3-4% these days. So that's about 40,000 plus dislocated workers in Orange County or not working individuals in Orange County. So there are plenty of people in Orange County that could benefit from being enrolled in our dislocated worker or adult program. It's merely a fact of just connecting with them and finding meaningful ways to connect with them.
So with the ESL classes, local community colleges, right? They have night classes where I'm sure they offer ESL. Is there any way to partner with them, flyers to the students there, letting them know, hey, once you learn English and you feel comfortable with it, hey, then we can help you as well.
We do have a partnership with the community colleges for referral. So they're part of our referral system and our network. So the answer is yes, we do. And we encourage that and we share information amongst the different organizations. But if I'm being honest with you, sometimes we step on each other's toes because they're doing similar work to us, right? So in all the community colleges and universities, they have their own workforce divisions, right? So they may not find value at that time to co-enroll in our program. We're really working with them right now to try to explain to them the why and the benefit of co-enrolling their students in our programs.
I think one of the, we're an ESL provider. I'm the WIOA Title II rep for Orange County. And yes, colleges have ESL classes evenings. I think in the past, I would not say this right now, but in the past, they were a little bit more difficult to access because they were credit-based. And what that typically meant is there was a start. You got enrolled at this time. And then at the semesters, if you guys remember, September, August, and then you roll again in January. So there was, and I don't know if Karma was experiencing that issue. I know we work with our local partners, Golden West, Orange Coast, and they're trying to develop more open entry, open exit. But I know the adult schools, just about all the ones, there's like four in Orange County that are open entry, open exit. So whenever they do, whenever there's I forget what the date, what Anthony said, when there's a layoff, working with our, reaching out to the adult schools and community colleges, because I know they've developed that. I think they're more flexible and able to accommodate those students. One of the things I will say, in my experience doing adult ed for 20 years, is the population low literacy. When you think about a campus like a Saddleback or Irvine Valley, navigating the parking, for one, try to find a parking spot. Two, read the map in English to try to find where the class is. It can be very daunting and a challenge for students that are low literate in English. So I think, again, colleges are learning or are adapting, and they're offering more classes out in the community. So I think it's getting better and access will be better. But I think I definitely would maybe come up with a strategy as an agency to make sure we know where they all are, because there's even your little school. We have classes at elementary schools where the adults drop their kids off, so that our anyone who's referring understands that there's a lot of options out there for literacy.
Maybe the mobile unit again.
Yeah, that's Karma. That'd be a good. I might get around that whole boundary issue.
We're trying. We need more money. So we've got to figure out a way to get the staff that I need in order to go after grants that we need, in order to get the money that we need to expand service delivery. Because right now, all we have is WIOLA dollars. I think we talked about this before. Most workforce systems, WIOLA is only 10% of their money. They usually have lots of just different sources of funding in order to be creative in terms of service delivery and program delivery. So at some point we need to get staffed up so that we can be competitive to go after money to do that. Right now I don't have the resources.
And it would be interesting to look at if you got out of some of brick and mortar or even reduced your square footage, mm-hmm. what kind of funding would that free up to do these activities mm-hmm. out in the community that might be so much more impactful?
Does a mobile unit count as a brick and mortar? We put like a brick in it and around.
No, but what it does count is a satellite. So in the law, I'm allowed to have to have a comprehensive, but then I'm allowed to have a fully satellite. So we consider the mobile unit as a satellite location.
Okay.
So brick in a bag of cement, right?
Bag of cement to get the mortar. Yeah. We're gonna be innovative. We're gonna dare to push the envelope.
I love it.
So, Karma, we're at 2:25.
Yes. The rest of the agenda. I'm going to speed through the rest of it if you're okay with it. If you don't mind, for the 211, for the surveys, I'm just going to trust that you guys have had an opportunity to look at the surveys. We're still trying to enhance program service delivery. Are you okay if we move past that item since you do have it in front of you and you can look at it later?
Yes.
Okay. And then for the 211 and the hiring event, same thing. So we're still trying to expand our relationship with 211 to create work experiences for individuals. I want to highlight that not only with 211, we want to really try to work with all the community partners to create work experience opportunities. 211 is the one that we have right now, but we are looking for opportunities to expand. So if you know of any employers that have opportunities, please connect us to them so that we can expand that. I'm going to skip past the hiring events. As you know, we've been short-staffed in the Business Solutions Unit. We haven't had as many job fairs and hiring events as we've done in the past. We did do one recently for veterans at SOCA University. It was well attended. There's more information in the report about it. We do have on loan, we have Elizabeth to kind of help us keep the business service unit afloat. We did do some interviewing recently. Hopefully we'll have somebody hired soon to support that unit. But in terms of the one-stop, the business services and the employer engagement report. We're still keeping things going. Elizabeth has been great with that transition, but we expect to do more once we get more staff hired. Right now we're understaffed. We only have one person, and it's Elizabeth in that unit. Can we scroll past that? I wanna get to the things that are really important today, just to bring it to your attention. Now that we're gonna be able to go into full detail, The next item on the agenda was the, can we go back to the agenda? Okay. The next was the locations. Again, we'll talk more about that. We're still trying to get Brea open. The virtual one-stop is on pause right now. We don't have the funding to support the virtual one-stop. As you've heard, I'm giving back the DOL money. Originally, when we were writing for the virtual one-stop, EDD at that time had said yes, and then they came back and said no. So at this time, we don't have the money for the virtual one-stop. I do think that that virtual one-stop idea would be good for our workforce system, but we need to find the money, which means I need to hire a grant writer, which we don't have. So I'm going to skip the locations because we don't have any real updates right now. The call center, again, the call center numbers are a little lower than what we've experienced in the past, but they're still providing support, not only to businesses, but also job seekers. And they're also supporting the micro business grant. So the call center is still doing phenomenally well. You'll hear more about some of their updates in the forthcoming meetings. What I really want to spend the energy on right now is the grant matrix and the expenditure report, because this is new. In terms of the grant matrix, you guys have seen the grant matrix. I'm not going to go in great detail. It basically provides you an update of the grants that we've applied for and the status of those. What I want to highlight is the sub-grant agreements. I had a education moment with the state and the feds about this board, and that this board is supposed to be reviewing financials, and they, and it was brought to their attention you weren't. So I'm trying to figure out a way for you to get, for you all to understand and know what the financial situation is for this board. I did ask for the accounting department to, if they could produce financial statements that businesses are typically exposed to, like just regular general accounting documents, so you guys can see the budget at a high level. I'm waiting for accounting to get back to me on that. Francis and I have talked to different organizations about grant management software, as well as accounting software, so that we can have our own tracking system for the money, so we can provide you insightful reports. Right now, what I'm giving you is a copy of our sub-grant agreements. So whenever EDD passes money down to us as a local area, they send me out a sub-grant agreement. I sign off on that sub-grant agreement, send it back to the state. Because we are a local workforce system, there really isn't any rejecting the subgrant agreement, because if we reject it, that means we are no longer the workforce system, right? But that money basically is how we pay for staff time. It's how we pay for our service providers, and it's given to us every year. So the money is stacked every year with the two-year time commitment. I mean, it overlaps. So when we pass out money to the community, it's first in, first out is how we do it. Like I said, I still have to figure out a way for you to see the actual expenditures. But what I wanted to expose you today in this meeting was what the actual sub-grant agreement looks like. Can we go down to page 121? Or yeah, I think it's 121. I'm sorry, 107. 107 is the start of it. So 107 is the start of it. So this is what it looks like. They send me a letter saying, hey, Karma, we're going to give you money. If I'm being honest, most of the time when I get this letter, it's after the fact, meaning that, as you know, money is given to us July through June, right? But you notice this letter is like December 5th. So throughout the year, they'll give us updates to the money, give us some, take it away. Oftentimes, they'll send me the sub-grant agreement that is retroactive, meaning that you already gave me the money, but you're now giving me the agreement, right? If we scroll down to the next page. So this is an example of a sub-grant agreement that we received where the prior amount was $11 million. They've decreased us from $11 million down to $8 million. If we scroll down. Okay, so you can see that what they did is took back rapid response money. So they took back the rapid response formula dollars because we didn't spend enough of it, right? And so that's what we talked about before, that if we're not able to spend it, they take it back. And in this situation, they took it back. We typically use rapid response to support our business services unit. Well, remember I told you that our business service unit has been understaffed for 2-3 years now. We have not had the amount of staff that we're supposed to have in that department to provide the services that we're supposed to provide in that department. As a result of that, funding went back to the state, right? In addition to that, a lot of businesses haven't engaged with us in a way that we need them to engage with us to create the apprenticeship programs and utilize the OJTs. And because we're not connected to the businesses in a meaningful way, we're giving the money back. So this is an example of how I received an award notice. And in the middle of the award term, money was taken back. This is high level. Like I said, I need to find a way for you to have this high level information, but then I also need you to be able to get in the weeds to satisfy the Fed and the state requirement for this board to provide fiscal oversight. Can we go down to the next page? I'm sorry, more. Okay, a little more. I want to get to the next. Okay, so this is the next letter. I just want to kind of share with you what these letters are. If you guys want to ask me offline, because I know we're pressed for time, more details about it, I'm happy to answer any questions you have. Please feel free to give me a call. This is another example of a modification. Can we scroll down to the next page? In this modification, what they did is they decreased this again. So we had $11 million to start. They took $1 million away, so it takes it down to $10 million. Can we go down a little bit further? And this example, same thing. So we have the rapid response and layoff aversion money. Again, this is how we pay for business solutions, and us being understaffed didn't help us as a workforce system, not having the appropriate amount of staff in that department, not providing enough business services in the community. As a result, money was taken away. As you can see, this was from July 1st of 2021 through September 30th, 2022. So this is after the fact, but like I said, what I wanna do is get you guys familiar with how these award notices come to us. What do they do in these award notices? My desire is to, every time I get one of these, I'm going to add it to our board meeting material so that you're up to date with sub-grant agreement notices that we receive as a workforce system, in addition to having those budgets that we look at in terms of how expenditures are going in and out of our programs. Can we go down a little bit more? Stop. Okay. So in this notice, you'll see that it started off with $3 million. They gave us a $1.8 million. It takes us to $5 million. This agreement is the current agreement. So this one starts as of April 1st, 2022 through June 30th, 2024. This includes our youth allocation. Typically, when EDD gives us money, they give us the youth money first, and then they give us adult and dislocated worker money later. If we can scroll to the next page. Okay. This notice, you'll see that they increase our adult and dislocated worker money, but this is from the period of July 1st, 2022 to June 30th, 2023. If you notice, it's a lot less money. So remember, I told you that when you give money back, you get less money, right? So if you look at, we had about $1 million worth of adult and dislocated worker the last period that we looked at. As you can see, it's less money this time around. Now they do give it to you in two allocations. So this is the first of the allocation, but it's a lot less than what they've given us in previous years because we were returning money back. For the adult formula funds, this is $695,000. This is the first round of it. And then they gave us $3 million of the youth funding and then $1 million of the dislocated worker. When we get ready to write contracts for our service providers for this upcoming year, this money will likely be the first pot used because it'd be the oldest money at that time. And then any money we receive the subsequent year will be the newest money that will be added onto their contract. I hope I'm making sense, but essentially we do first in, first out.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like I've said a whole lot. I want to make sure that you guys understand what I'm saying and what I'm talking about. Are there questions? Because I know this is a lot to throw at you and you've never seen this before.
Couple questions. So they reduce our funding, but the idea is we didn't spend it. So we're not, you're not in a deficit, right? Or could be because maybe you hire late and it's past the fact.
At this time, we're not in a deficit, but future planning, it creates a deficit for us, right? So where Francis is looking to expand our locations and look at Brea, right? And if we're used to receiving on average $2 million, but then we start getting cuts to $5 or $6 million, right? It could create a problem with how we fund future sites and or service delivery. Now, the good thing about how this all works is let's hypothetically say, yeah, we got a slow start, but things picked up. We did an amazing job and we need more money. We can always go back and ask for more money, or we can ask to convert existing money. So for example, we could ask to take our dislocated worker money and convert it to adult money and vice versa. We'd have to, of course, go to the state and ask for that. So there are options to get more money if we could prove that we needed it, but it's not easy.
That was gonna be my second question. So thank you, you read and read my mind. Last one is, I kind of heard reference to HR, and that was kind of a a recurrent theme, couldn't hire people, caseworkers, all these staff. Is that something, and are we recorded? I guess I wouldn't ask you this recording. Is that an issue? Because I experienced that in my district. I get monies, I can't hire people for, you know, I was here, well, they're not applying, or there's just this huge delays in getting those positions.
If I make clear, it's a combination. So across Orange County, any of the county departments, they're all understaffed. So like in every single county department, there is some understaffing happening, right? So I think that, to be fair, there's staffing issues everywhere. Even some of the employers that I talk to have a challenge finding qualified staff, right? So you have that issue. Mm-hmm. But beyond that issue, it's a time frame. So for example, let's say that we find some amazing candidates, right? Well, it does take the county, because of the county's process, is time to hire that person on. And sometimes you get a better offer. Mm-hmm. And so if you got a better offer, we might've lost out on that candidate. And we're still in a competitive job market. So we've missed some talent. Like, we had Rhonda on our staff. She was really great at her job. She got picked up by somebody else. So in Anthony's program, he's had people that have moved on to different programs. It's one of those situations that it's not just one answer.
On one of the pages, for example, page 108, it said the prior amount was $11,134,000, and it had a decrease of $2.5 million. How do they? Is there a formula for them that they use to say we're going to take this much back? Is it because we've only used a certain percentage up to a certain point?
So it's a combination. So funny, I used to do this for the state of Ohio. I used to decide exactly this. And so it's a formula. So it's a formula based on how much you've used, how many people are in your community, and how much money you've given me back in the past. If you have a trending habit, right? Most of the time, it's also by the expiration date. So if I told you that, hey, you only have this money until June 30th, that means I'm taking it back as of June 30th.
Okay. And then, so say you're understaffed, we get money, say it's $1 million for whatever, and we know halfway through the year, we're understaffed, we don't have the people to reach our goals. Is it better if we're going to concede and just say, hey, take the money back, versus them saying, hey, give us the money back? Or do we just...
For this, no. So this is your formula funds. Never is it a good idea for you to give back your formula funds. Never. For your grants that you apply for outside of this, absolutely. Because what, for example, the DOL grant that I decided to give back, you don't want DOL to put out another grant that you want to compete for and then you have poor performance, because they count that. And so it's better for you to give it back and say, you know, I thought I could do this, I can, than for you to keep the grant the entire term, don't perform, and then try to apply for another grant in the future. They look at that. But formula funds, never. I would never advise that.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, I still have to find a way to get in the weeds, like the staff costs, the overhead expenditures, the service providers expenditures, so you guys can see the bigger picture. But this was my first stab of trying to let you see the money, because again, we haven't done it before. I got a gentle notice that I needed to fix this. And so this is my first step in fixing the problem.
Yeah. I mean, being on the Orange Chamber Executive Board, we go through the financials and it does help a lot. I mean, instead of seeing a lump sum, you see exactly where that money is allocated to.
Yeah. I think that it's very helpful, but we haven't seen it before. So
yeah,
it's gonna take a little bit to digest a lot of information that's on there.
It is. So this is just the formula fund. I need to scroll on so you guys can see the other programs. So if we go down to, I think it starts on one, Lord, a lot of pages. I think it starts on 130. Let me see what that looks like. I think it's 130 where it starts. Okay. So this is the expenditure report. So every quarter, the county is responsible for uploading in CalJobs our expenditures for that quarter. So this is me trying to give you a glimpse of what the county is submitting up to the state as to how much money we spent based off of the allocations that they've given us. Again, this is not the best way to show it to you. I want to give you income statements and balance sheets. So I'm working with the accounting department. That's not something they usually do. So I'm working with them to figure out, can they develop income statements and balance sheets that you're normally used to seeing?
Yeah.
Or either I buy software that does it, because this isn't going to help you see the picture the way you need to. But I want
to provide it in context.
Correct. I wanted to give you an opportunity to just have access to what we have right now while I try to figure out how to fix this. Mm-hmm.
It's a start.
It is a start. So this is an example of the expenditure report, and it basically referenced every single pot of money you saw in those notice, the sub grant agreement notices. This is the report that they have to submit up to the state to say, here's where the money went. Let's go ahead and scroll on because I'm pressed for time. I want to move on to 200. So a report that might be easier for you to follow is the micro business grant program. That's another program that was managed through our department. This expenditure report might help you see kind of where the money went. We receive over $3.6 million. As you can see, it's a breakdown between the staff costs and supplies. Again, this is where I'm going to try to go with all the other expenditures. But this one was readily available. Francis is in the habit of sending this up to GoViz. So this one's easy to do because you can actually see it right in front of you, where the other one, we didn't have a system for it. So this one's, I think you guys can catch where we are with the expenditures and how well we're doing with this one and where the money's going.
Yeah. Other administrative is pretty high there, like 300,000.
Yes. So in this particular grant, they allowed at least, I want to say close to 10% for admin costs. So that's going to be the cost for the county's accounting department, for their contracts department, for their IT department. All of that is in their administrative costs.
Okay.
This is Mike Daniel. If I could just say a couple of things, you know, one to, you know, kudos to Karma and her team. We're working with the County of Riverside and San Bernardino, who have struggled to get out 50% of this. And the County of LA has gotten out $0 of this. So this is the only county that's gotten out almost all of their funding. So Karma, your whole team should be congratulated.
I'm going to call out Francis because it's not me. It is Francis and Nancy and the call center team that have made this happen. So they have done a phenomenal job on this grant and they deserve the praise.
Awesome. Yeah, Francis and your team, great job.
It's really our support staff. They're doing the work. We're just giving them a little bit of direction, and they're doing the work. So we've got good staff working for us. Thank you.
So I'm going to go to the, if we're okay with this one, I'm going to go to the next one so you can see this one. This is the last one, is the U.S. Department of Labor grant that I share with you that we're returning back to to DOL. As I mentioned earlier, we received $3 million. We had a very slow start. I think I told you the first year we didn't get anything done because we didn't have any staff. We didn't get staff hired until like September. That's when we got Anthony and kind of some of the other people. So that's why you'll see there's barely any expenditures on this program. Like I said, I think it's better to give it back and say, hey, I can't do this, than to lose an opportunity for future grants because we're not going to be able to deliver the program that we believed that we could when we applied. Now, could Anthony probably kill himself to make it happen? Yes, he would. He would absolutely, he and his team would kill themselves to make that grant happen, but I wouldn't do that to them. So I just want to show you the expenditures on this one. Again, this is expenditures that you can follow. I am going to work on trying to figure out how to get that for the formula funds and the regular wheel of dollars. Any questions or concerns about this program?
I'm good.
Okay. I think I'm gonna make our deadline. So then the last thing on the list, if we can go to 202, is an update on all of our compliance findings and monitoring. So as you can see, we still have those old ones still open from 2016 through 2019. They're still open. I'm not really sure when they'll be resolved or closed, but I wanted to let you know that they're still open and still being evaluated. As you can see, pretty much all the auditing after that, we've resolved, completed, no findings. So we've, like I said, in the past meetings, we've done a really good job of kind of cleaning up our house, getting things in order so that we are in compliance with the laws and that we are meeting the expectations of EDD and DOL. The Orange County program support, monitoring team, they are going out to monitor our service providers. As you can see, they've got the fiscal monitoring. Some of it is resolved and complete. The 2021-22 is ongoing. And then they're still working on the 2022 program monitoring, which is happening right now. So there is being progress being made. I, by the gentle brush of the feds and the state, I again have to find a way to make sure that I fully disclose what's happening on all of these to this board. This is our first step at it because it's a lot of information. I will try to figure out a way where you can get updates on things that significant findings for service providers, so you're aware of it. I will definitely share with you any of the letters that have findings for us moving forward. I will share those with you, but I need to also share with you service provider letters.
Okay.
And that's it for my updates. I think we did pretty good on time.
Yeah.
All right. So I think the next item of discussion, Barbara.
Yes. Do any of the committee members have anything they'd like to bring up? Nope. Sounds like no. So in terms of the agenda, we allocate 2 hours. We spend a lot of time going over program performance. And now that you've added, and I think it's good and appreciate these new expenditure reports, I can see really diving into those as well and spending quite a bit of time. So I just wonder, you know, if there's other areas on this agenda that could be compressed, or we could do as you send it to us, we read ahead, or we're going to have to allocate more time because it feels like we always are in this sort of speed mode, because these new expenditure reports you added in there, those really warrant some good going through as well.
I think what we can do, I don't think that we need to cut anything down because it is the requirement of this committee to really get in the weeds of one-stop activities, right? I think that what we could do is where we have the performance reports, and I'd like to ask you guys to read it all in advance. And so just come with questions. Yeah. So that way we're not reading it to you, because right now we're spending all that time with staff reading it to you.
Yeah, there's no need for that.
Yeah, so what we can do is just highlight issues.
Patterns, trends.
That's correct. Right. So I think that's one way we can cut down some time. I think that although I love Eric's report, he's long-winded. So maybe we can also have him just give us highlights as well as any other program, just highlights, unless you guys have specifically asked questions.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right. So I think moving forward, essentially, we won't do the report outs by the staff like we normally would. We would just leave that space open in the event that you want to address something under that category. Mm-hmm. But I do think that we're going to need to spend time on the money.
Time is money. Yeah, there you go.
We need to spend time on the money so that we can be on the same page of where the expenditures are going, so you guys have more oversight of the dollar spent engagement with us in terms of compliance findings. Remember, every 2 years we have to certify this workforce board. And part of that is you provide fiscal and program oversight, and then you do regional work. And so I need to make sure that I can say with confidence, and they can go back and see that you guys are actually doing oversight and looking at the budget and looking at the performance issues that we have as a workforce area and addressing that with us.
Yeah. That all makes sense. Yes. And that's where, if we want to, in good faith, say we really reviewed and dug into these things, we need the time to do that.
Right. So we'll shift some of our conversation to the things that are required by law, and then we'll leave everything else just open if you have any comments or concerns that you want to address.
Okay. Anything before we close? Any other comments? Thank you to staff and all the reports. They were very good. We may not like what we hear in some of them, but people were prepared and presented well. So barring no additional comments, we will adjourn the meeting at 2:50.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.